welcome to the Pyramid Podcast Euro Special, where three lads discuss all things Euro 2024. The tournament is days away and we'll give our predictions, including who we think will win the tournament, who will underachieve and who the dark horses are, who will take home the golden boot and which players will be standout. And then we'll finish by previewing England's game against Serbia on Sunday, including what our starting 11 would be if we were Gareth Southgate. I'm your host, Alex Murphy, and once again, I'm joined by Tom Gallagher and Tom Lawrence. So boys, only days away now and time we do a predictions for Euro 2024. We obviously did this for the Premier League previously with mixed results across the board. But want to start with the Euro 2024 winners. And Laura, I'm going to come to you first, please.
What do you want, a prediction on the winners?
Yes, please.
England. that's a silly question. Well, why? Why not? I mean, we've got the best player in England, the best player in Germany, the best player in Spain this year. We've gone quarter-final, semi-final, and final in our last three. We've got the best squad in the tournament. We've probably got the best momentum over the last kind of 6 to 8 years of any nation. We're the red-hot favourites. I mean, why not?
Well, there's some other big sides out there, aren't there, up for it? And we'll obviously come on to mine and Tomo's predictions on who we think soon it might be that it's England across the board. But there are some big teams there, Lauro, in the competition, and England haven't won a major trophy in getting on for 60 years now. So there'd always be question marks on their ability to get over the line, looking back to 3 years ago for Euro 20/21.
No, but this kind of Gareth Southgate era has gotten over the line more than any other era in the last 60 years. Sometimes getting over the line can mean a penalty shootout, which we did against Colombia. Sometimes it's getting to a semi-final, which we did against Croatia. We hadn't done that in a long time. And then it was getting to the first final in 60 years. There's always a progression and a build-up before something big happens, and this is the one where we're going to do it. So, yes, there are other teams with big players, and when you boys do some predictions, we can get into their squads and things like that. But for me, we've got the best squad and we've got the best chance of any nation in it. So I think we're the obvious choice to win the Euros, not in a biased way. I wouldn't say it if I didn't think it. I think England will win.
And where are you on the thoughts that England are potentially, their best players are better than where we were for the World Cup, but actually we might be a little bit weaker across the board in regards to some of that experience missing? Obviously, you look at the likes of Calvin Phillips, you look at Marcus Rashford, Jack Grealish, Harry Maguire is obviously more through injury than selection, but Raheem Sterling missing big players from previous campaigns, and that experience isn't there in this squad.
Well, our best outing of any tournament was Euro 2020/2021. And that was an inaugural tournament for both Rice and Phillips, and probably Phil Foden, and probably one or two others as well. The only real difference between this time and the World Cup is Harry Maguire, really. Sterling ended up going home, and players like Rashford were bit parts. So I think our squad is better. We've got a couple of, or probably, if Luke Shaw's fit, we've got one difference at the back, where Gray's probably going to play instead of Harry Maguire, and I'd rather Harry Maguire play, but I don't think that's a massive downgrade. And then a little bit of an imbalance in midfield, which again we can come on to. But you can't go to a tournament with a front four of Bellingham, Saka, Foden and Kane and not be uber confident and err on the side of optimism, in my opinion. And anything other than that is ridiculous. So you're not going to turn me away from thinking that we've got an amazing chance to win this and are the red hot favourites. Yes, other teams are good, but on the same token, I think we're better.
Tomo, come on to you then. So are you in the same camp as Laura back in England, or fancy one of the other main protagonists?
Yeah, I'm less optimistic about England, to be honest. Not because I don't think England are one of the top three teams in the tournament. I think they are. They're up there with France and Portugal. I just think my prediction is that France will win. And it's sort of explains itself, really. Kylian Mbappe is the best player in the world. They've got an array of unbelievable defenders. Didier Deschamps doesn't even fancy William Saliba. Imagine having William Saliba in England's back four. he would just be the best player in that team straight away, or best, sorry, defender in that team straight away. Yeah, and they've obviously got Griezmann. He sort of drops and plays a sort of a hybrid midfield, a forward role. Kylian Mbappe, Dembele on either side, Giroud playing, sort of like bringing people in. They're just the sort of the same arguments that Loro has for England to win the tournament, in the sense of they have the best squad, the better players. They performed really well over the last. I mean, they didn't do well at the Euro 2020, but they won the World Cup in 2018, got to the final in the World Cup last time around. Nearly did the unthinkable when they were 2-0 down against Argentina, and Mbappe obviously scored a hat-trick in the final. So I just think, for all of the reasons that CL have given for England to win it, I actually think there's an argument for why France are the favourites. It's no sort of big shock that I'm going for them. And actually, just in terms of England, I just think defensively, we needed to be at a full fettle, really... like in a strong position in order to sort of like compete with the best in the world, or the best in Europe in this case. And when Luke Shaw's not played for so long, Harry Maguire's not there, John Stones, there's a question mark over his fitness, and that's three of your four back four there. So I just think we're not quite in a strong enough position to say that we're favourites, even though obviously the bookmakers in this country has us as favourites, but that's more. I think that's just more to do with the fact that obviously loads of people are just belting on England to win.
Well, the one thing I'd say for France is that I think you make an important point about him not having Saliba, and he prefers Upamecano and Konate. And I actually think Upamecano is one of the most overrated players in world football. I thought he was absolutely shocking against England in the World Cup. I think he gave away one of the penalties, I think the Mason Mount push. I can't remember if he gave away the other one, but he had a really poor game, stood out as having a bad game. And I think this season for Bayern Munich in the Champions League, in one of the knockout games, he was really, really poor as well, made some terrible decisions in some of the games. So yeah, I'm leaning towards France maybe not having the tournament that everyone thinks that they will. But their quality is... You know, you can't talk against that. Mbappe, as you say, Griezmann, Dembele, Giroud. Their midfield, they've got Camavinga and Tchouaméni, Adrien Rabiot, who seems to play every sort of tournament for France and seems to perform for them. So, yeah, look, they're right up there with the favourites alongside England, but we'll see.
Why is Olivier Giroud being thrown into that? He has in the past. If we had a 37-year-old Arsenal reject up front, everyone would be going, they've got Kane. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just such an imbalance in the kind of way that people look at other... Like, for instance, I know that you like Portugal, Murph. And I looked at their team today, and it looks really good. Bruno Fernandes, Bernardo Silva. Am I swapping their players for ours? Not a fucking chance in the world. I agree that defensively, the continuity's gone a little bit from where we were in tournaments gone by. But if everyone's fit, not really. It's only Maguire out and Gueye in. And up until probably Christmas, no one would have even had Maguire in the squad. People thought you should have gone to West Ham last year. And we're looking at a side that has got Declan Rice in midfield, possibly the second best in the world in his position. You've got Foden, Bellingham and Kane, who are possibly the best in their respective leagues. And then the one no one really speaks about is just Bukayo Saka, who's a world-class right-winger who does it consistently for Arsenal for the last couple of years and has been a top performer for England Player of the Year, I think, for the last two. So I don't think saying that Mark Gueye coming into that defence is enough reason to counteract England being favourites for the tournament. I've just tried getting onto a French bookmakers to see whether we're favourites over there or not, because that's an interesting one. Because what I was going to say is money doesn't lie. Everyone likes to be pessimistic about England, but we're favourites. So everyone's saying, oh, no, I'm not sure about England. But the bookmakers say that most people are putting their money on England. And they're rarely... Well, look, people say the bookmakers are rarely wrong. Don't get me wrong. I think other sides are good. France have been there and done it. I think they're just a little bit over the edge. I don't think Kylian Mbappe is the best player in the world personally. And I don't think he plays in the most competitive league in the world. I think a lot of our players do. And if we meet France, I'd be very, very confident. There's a couple of other teams I wouldn't be as confident against in terms of Styles making fights, and I think there's maybe one or two that wouldn't be right for us. But all in all, at the start of the tournament, just looking at the squads, the momentum, everything about it, England, I think, will be right up there. But I would be interested to know whether other countries have us as favourites. I'm not allowed on the French betting side.
There was something actually this week or this weekend that I read exactly on that point, which is that someone had made a point that England are bookies' favourites in England because everyone's patriotic and puts 100 quid on England to win and it brings their odds in. But they were saying that that's kind of quite old school. And now betting companies are almost like a bit of a stock market where it's like a global entity. So England are favourites because they are across Europe or across the world favourites for the tournament. It's like all on sort of this thing called the exchange, and that's what fluctuates the odds. And actually, that's because French people, Spanish people, Italian people, people who are betting on the Euros have got England as out-and-out favourites. It's not just like patriotic Brits betting on England on English bookmakers, apparently.
Yeah, well, no one's sat here saying that England aren't one of the top three favourites. We all agree probably France and England are the favourites. Then you've got Portugal maybe just behind. And the reason why I mentioned Drew, not because I think he's like holds a candle to Harry Kane, but he was I think he scored France's second goal against us in the quarterfinal of the World Cup. He's done it time and time again for France. Okay, he is 37, but he's the type of striker who's never relied on pace, and international football seems to suit him. But my main reasoning behind France is just that you look at their back four compared to England's, and it's got so much strength and depth to it. When William Saliba's sort of sitting on the bench, you just think that's incredible. And
yeah, you say that.
I just worry about like John Stones, our best defender, and I don't think he's got 90 minutes in him for the group games. I'm not sure if he can go and play 7 games back to back, basically, without picking up an injury. And then if John Stone gets injured, then it's like, I just think we're really struggling then.
I think if Mbappe gets injured, France are really struggling. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and you can say that about a lot of countries. These players aren't injured.
I do agree with you, but at the end of the day, he's shown throughout his career that he doesn't really pick up injuries. John Stones has been injury prone this season a lot. So obviously, and I think he didn't play all of the game against Iceland, and he went off and there was a little bit of a niggle, and there seems to be rumours that he might not be fit enough for the first game. So, but I also agree with you. I wouldn't swap, say, England's front six with France's. I wouldn't do that, even though I think Mbappe is the best player out of the lot of them.
Would you swap our 11 for France's?
Probably at this current point, with Trippier at left back, Gehi at centre half.
You just mentioned the worst two facets of the team. What about the other nine? Kane instead of Giroud.
Yeah, but I'd have Mbappe over Foden, Dembele over. No, I'd have Saka over Dembele.
Like Bellingham over Griezmann.
Yeah, but Camavinga, Tchouameni, Griezmann. Like, there's not much to choose between Rice, Bellingham, and whoever else we play in there. Maybe it's Maynou, maybe it's Trent Alexander-Arnold. You'd have Kyle Walker over any right back in the world. But then you'd have the French goalie, you'd have the French left back, and you'd have
the French goalie? Lloris doesn't play anymore. It's Mike Maignan in goal, isn't it? Would you have Pickford over him? And then fully fit Luke Shaw, would you have him over Teo Hernandez? I'd definitely have Stones over Upamecano. Look, boys, I think you're both going for the two tournament favourites there, and they're both up there for a reason, right? They've both got unbelievable squads and teams. It just comes down to your personal preference on who you think's going to win it.
Jordan Pickford's one of the top performing international goalkeepers in the world and has been for the last 6 to 8 years, I would argue.
Well, I'll do my winner, and rather unsurprisingly, it's the other sort of one in the top three in the bookies charts, which is Portugal. I am going to put a caveat on this, though, which is I think it's depend on them not relying on Ronaldo too much. I think we've seen with United and Portugal in Ronaldo's second stint, and certainly with other clubs that he's been at since, that there's a real reliance on getting the ball to him and him kind of the plays dictated based on him and the whole team set around him. I think that they probably have pound for pound the deepest squad. You could maybe argue France, England have got strong starting 11, but I think it's probably strongest or deepest in the competition. And they got elite defenders, creativity in midfield, goals up front, obviously Ronaldo and pace. That forward line, you've got Ronaldo joined by Bernardo Silva, João Felix, Diogo Jota, Leao at Milan. Goncalo Ramos is obviously the backup striker, but might get some minutes over Ronaldo. You then go into midfield, Bruno Fernandes, out and out 10. João Neves, Benfica wonderkid, who's linked with United to play CDM for them. Vitinha, who was in the League One team of the season for PSG. João Palhinha, we know what he can do at Fulham. He's strongly linked with going with Vincent Kompany to Bayern Munich. Two other midfielders, Matheus Nunes, he hasn't played much for City, granted, and Ruben Neves, who's been in Saudi. So they are two small concerns, but that's just your forwards and midfields. Like goalkeepers, they got Jose Sarr and Rui Patricio, who is at Wolves and Roma, and they're understudies to Diogo Costa, who's at Porto. So that's got to be probably the strongest goalkeeper trio at the tournament. And then defence, Ruben Dias is going to be partnered by Inacio or Antonio Silva, who are two young lads from Sporting and Porto, respectively. Or even Pepe still kicking about, who's the oldest player, I think, at the Euros tournament, if he plays any minutes. And then their fullbacks, they got Nuno Mendes and Cancelo at left back, and Dalot and Semedo. Dalot, Man United's player of the season, and Semedo, who's another strong player at Wolves. So, yeah, I'm going Portugal based on that depth. They know how to do it in major tournaments, as we've seen before. And Messi won a World Cup. I wonder if Ronaldo's just going to answer back with a Euro. So they're my predictions. Laurie, what's your thoughts on Portugal?
Yeah, I like them. And I think they'll be a difficult side to beat. Like you said, they've been there and done it before. Won it in 2016. I remember them getting to the final in 2004 and losing to Greece, and Ronaldo being in tears. Biggest thing about that, it's 20 years ago and he's still playing in the Euros. That was a home tournament for them. But if England weren't there, I think I'd fancy Portugal, because I do like you say, the depth in quality that they have, and they have got a lot of match winners in there. But if England play Portugal, I'd fancy England every day of the week. So I think they'll go far, but not as far as us.
I think you make a good point, Murph. I think Cristiano Ronaldo is he's the elephant in the room, and he obviously he's still performing and still scoring goals in international football, and obviously scoring tons of goals in Saudi Arabia. But there might come a time in the tournament where he either has to be rested or gets taken off after 60 minutes. And how will he react to that? And how will that affect the squad dynamics? Because we've seen time and again, he doesn't react well to being benched, even though he's 38, 39, whatever it is. And he becomes the story, essentially. And I don't think that helps the overall team and the team dynamics. But one small nagging thing with Portugal is you named so many good attacking players, but they're all quite similar. And no one's like, I would say, it's got like electric pace. Maybe Rafael Leao, but he's quite often starts on the bench for Portugal. So because you've got Bernardo Silva, Jota, and even Pedro Neto, they're a little bit more maybe reliable to do the defensive work than Leao. But you can, yeah, when you just list off their squad, it's just like baller after baller, especially in that midfield area.
I think as well, it's not just a case of like how Ronaldo reacts is coming off, though that's a very valid point. But it's almost that when he came back to United and sometimes to Portugal, it's almost like the players playing alongside him feel like completely not in awe of him, but almost like we've got to get the ball to Ronaldo. We've got to cross the ball into Ronaldo. There were so many times where Bruno Fernandes pre-Ronaldo would have played a better pass, but instead he just tried to whip it into the box because, you know, Ronaldo's in there and everything seems to go through him. I'm not trying to say here that Ronaldo's not one of the greatest ever, because of course he was, but I think sometimes it can be at the detriment of other players in the team. And when he was at the height of his powers, that was fine because he was, you know, pound for pound the best in the world. But now he's a little bit older. Does it just take away from that overall team by him as an individual? So that would be my only concern with them. But yeah, look, I think across the three sides we've got there, boys, we've covered the three favourites in England, France and Portugal. So no doubt an outsider will win it. Want to move on to Golden Boot for the trophy. And Tomo, going to come to you first for this one.
Well, given that France are going to win the tournament by my predictions, and given that I've told everyone on the podcast that I think Kylian Mbappe is the best player in the world, I think coming off the back of ending his time at PSG, fulfilling his lifelong dream to become a Real Madrid player, I think he's going to be in buoyant mood. And I think he's going to bang in goals for fun. And I wouldn't put it past him to get the Golden Boot, win the tournament, and then go on to win the Ballon d'Or as well.
Laura?
Top goal scorer?
Yeah.
Kane. I think you'd have to be silly to look past Harry Kane, really. And I think he's due a couple of caveats. One, I think he's due a good run in the group stages, because I think he's been a little bit barren in the last two tournaments. But one thing I'm looking for from Harry Kane is to go and grab it, because we're going to get through the group, right? It's almost impossible not to, I think. Even the third place goes through most of the time. It's when we get to those big games and we play France. I'm not looking for one converted penalty and one missed. I'm looking for him to go and take the game away and score a couple of goals. Go and score a hat-trick somewhere. He got the Golden Boot in World Cup 2018, but it was two against Tunisia and three against Panama. Go and score a hat-trick, please, against Spain. And that goes for all the other big forward players that we've got that we're going to need this year. Foden, Saka. Saka, go, don't worry about Iran. Go and get a brace against Italy this time and take it away from them. Don't let them take over midfield in the final third of the game like always seems to happen in the big games. We're going to need our attackers on song in the latter stages of the tournament this time to take us to glory. But I think Harry Kane will produce in the group stages. He'll probably score enough in that just to get the Golden Boot. And then I think he'll probably break some kind of record this year in terms of goal scoring, I think, at the Euros, and maybe go away with 12 or 13.
Just one note of caution on Harry Kane is Gareth Southgate's mentioned a couple of times about his back injury. And I just wonder if he'll play the first sort of 60 minutes, 75 minutes of the first two group games. Hopefully with the thought process that England's going to win both those games, and then he might even get rested for the last game, just to manage that back injury. But other than that, obviously, yeah, he's favourite to score all the goals.
Yeah, even with that priced into your thinking, I would still fancy Kane to, even if he's only played 60 against Denmark, I'm looking at him and Serbia to maybe notch a couple. But that's just me.
He's also at home in Germany now, isn't he? Like, he's probably played in all of these stadiums this season, in Bundesliga games, in his just league fixtures. I think he scored over 40 goals, didn't he? He's in his absolute prime. Laura, I think you made a really important point earlier, which is like, you remember back in the day, England would come up against world-class strikers and it was like, they've got him. Every other team must be thinking they've got Harry Kane. And in any other team, if that was in the Spurs team, they'd probably double up on him. Teams would double up on him, but with England, you're leaving Saka, Foden and Bellingham free, or one of them free, by doing that. So you're not able to do that. You're right, he struggled in the last Euros to get going until the knockouts, but he did score against Germany, twice against Ukraine, scored the kind of rebound penalty against Denmark. And I think he'll get started early in this tournament against Serbia. So I am going Harry Kane as well, even though I've got Portugal to win it. I think that Ronaldo isn't going to get all of the minutes. I think they are going to be shared about with Goncalo Ramos. And so, yeah, I'm going to go for HK to get the Golden Boot.
Just playing devil's advocate here. Harry Kane is obviously an unbelievable player, but he's gone to Bayern this year and made the team significantly worse, even though he scored 40 goals. Because they've not won any trophies. He's never won a trophy in his career. Arguably, playing devil's advocate, Laura, before you come in and kick off, he's arguably never really done it in a massive game, semi-final or a final for Tottenham, and now for Bayern last year in the semi-final against Real Madrid, was it? Or yeah, it was Real Madrid. So can he do it again? Can he has to do it. Like you just said, the challenge you put to him was, can he do it against Spain or France or whatever? Because the group games are the group games. So just playing devil's advocate. He has to do it in the biggest games.
Yeah, that isn't that we were talking about top goal scorer there though. So devil's advocate would be saying that he's not going to get many goals. You've come in and said he scored 40 for Bayern Munich.
No, I just said he's made the team worse because they didn't challenge for any trophies this year.
Okay, I'm not sure that's Harry Kane's fault, but I agree. I think he needs to. And like you just said, Murph, to be fair, in the last Euros, in the latter stages, the one where he scored against Ukraine. And then the Denmark rebounded penalty and stuff like that. I know they're bigger games, but we had quite an easy route there, didn't we, other than the Germany game. Every time we come up against a prop, like Croatia, Italy, France, like go and fucking take the game away in those big, big, big games against the big teams that are decent. That's what we're looking for from Harry Kane. Top goal scorer, I think, is pretty much in the bag. I don't think he'll come away from that tournament not being top goal scorer, but I'd much rather him come away with the European Championship.
I think a shortage of world-class strikers at the Euros as well. Mbappe, obviously, is going to play out wide, but he will be up there. Harry Kane, we've spoken about. Ronaldo, we've just discussed about his minutes. And then beyond that, the next kind of crop of teams in there, you've got Lukaku maybe, but he's past his prime. Morata, you never know what you're going to get with Morata. Italy, obviously, Immobile doesn't play anymore, so it'd be Scamacca. So I don't think that there's a whole host of world-class centre-forwards who you could put in. Obviously, Haaland's not at the competition. Isak's not at the competition. Some of the kind of strikers we know about in the Prem and some of the other ones across the... Lewandowski is injured for Poland for the first game or two, but again, he's a little bit older now. So, yeah, I think it's probably quite an easy one to win if you can get a decent start in the group stages. I fancy if you got yourself to four or five goals, you'd be fairly in with a good chance of winning that. So, but yeah, Harry Kane, Mbappe, definitely going to be the two of the main protagonists for that. Laurie, going to switch it up now and go to flops for the tournament. So from a team perspective, which team do you think are going to underperform?
Well, you said earlier the three favourites are England, France and Portugal. Actually, the third favourites are Germany. And I think probably mainly because it's a home tournament for them. But I don't think Germany are going to be anywhere near it this time. And if they're third favourites and I don't think they're going to get very far into the tournament, I'd consider that a flop. And the reason being, just the opposite to England, like maybe a bit similar to England in that kind of late 2000s, early 2010 stages where we had an OK team, but we never really got going. I don't think they've got any real momentum there in Germany. It doesn't feel like they've been at it for the last 5 or 6 years and they've been disappointing in tournaments. And I just don't see them making an assault at it, even though it's in Germany. And I don't think it's actually that common that the home nation wins their tournament unless it's in France. I'm not sure any other team's done that in a long time. So I remember World Cup 2006 was in Germany and they didn't win it. So I look at Germany's squad and I can see that they've got good players there, but I'm just not sure that they're in the same kind of league as the other three that we were mentioning earlier. So I think Germany are going to disappoint their home fans and bow out of the tournament fairly early.
And Tomo, did I see on Twitter today that there was a bust up between Füllkrug and Anthony Rudiger?
Yeah, but I think that's all a much ado about nothing. Just I think Rudiger put in a bad tackle on Füllkrug and they got up and pushed each other and had to be separated. But let's be honest, that happens in every training session ever. So I don't. It's just Germany are only third favourites because it's being played in Germany. They like if you look at they got didn't even qualify in the World Cup from the group. Did they? And in the last Euros, obviously, we beat them handsomely at Wembley. Although that Thomas Müller chance had the bumhole twitching, let's be honest. And then I don't think they did very well in 2018 either. So, yeah, I agree. But my flops for the tournament, if we're going to come on to that, and let me just caveat this by saying, really, for me, as an England fan, anything other than final is a failure, just because of sort of this is where the team's at now. You've got semi-final 2018, final 2021, and then the quarterfinal against France, pretty much one of the best teams in the world, last time out. So I'm going to say the biggest flops for me are going to be England, because I predict that they'll go out in the quarterfinals again to a Portugal or France or whoever it may be. Basically, as soon as we come up against another elite opposition, I think we'll go out, and just basically because of that defence, unfortunately, there's a lot of worries there. And actually, I think, was it today or yesterday, it got leaked that Trent Alexander-Arnold was going to play that centre midfield position. And stuff like that worries me. Why is that getting leaked to the press nearly 6 days before the game? Like, I know leaks happen all the time in happy dressing rooms, but for me, it just feels like something's not quite... Like, not everyone's singing off the same hymn sheet this time round. But I hope I'm wrong.
There was something that we were sent, which is a path to the final. Now, obviously, these are all kind of conceptual, because the other teams have got to do their side of the bargain for you to play these sides. But England are, no matter what, going to play Serbia, Denmark and Slovenia in the group. If they win their group, then the team that they're likely to play in the last 16, because they'll play a team in third place in their group, the prediction is Czech Republic, who I think we played in the last Euros in the group stages, I think we beat them 1-0. Then the quarterfinal, based on the predicted route, would then be Italy, and then you'd run into a France in the semi-final, and then the best of the other side of the tournament would probably be a Portugal or a Germany or a Spain that you'd meet in the final. So I'd fancy us to get past Czech Republic and Italy. And if we went out to France in the semi-final, would you see that as a tournament flop, Tomo? Do you think it's got to be a final or a win for Southgate now for it to be a good tournament?
Yeah, so for me, like, flop's obviously quite a black and white term, isn't it? And obviously, say, for instance, if we go out to France and it's like a pick'em game and we play really well, but we, like, Harry Kane misses a penalty again, we deserve to win, or France get the rub of the green on a couple of decisions, then you can't turn it around and say, well, England flopped. But yeah, it would still be disappointing for me, just because of where England are at. I just think this is the natural progression, and because it's Gareth Southgate, I believe it will be Gareth Southgate's last tournament. I just think this is it now, and for me, the final is the very minimum for it to be considered a success. So flop's probably the wrong word, but just because I'm basing off the highest standard.
No, it's fair. If England were to go out in the quarterfinal, that's a flop. If that's what your prediction is, that we go out to someone then that is a flop for this current England side. My flop is Italy. So obviously, following on from, we know what happened in Euro 2020, they since failed to qualify for the World Cup. They lost their manager to Saudi Arabia. They've got a manager now, Luciano Spalletti, who was obviously the Napoli manager. They're in a group with Spain, who I think are going to have a good tournament, Croatia, who always seem to perform in major tournaments, and then Albania, who are obviously right up against it with those three. They are the reigning champions, but I think their squad's incredibly weak compared to previous. So they haven't got Bonucci, Chiellini, Verratti, Insigne, Immobile, kind of a real spine of that team as we've known Italy over the last years. And they've actually got some injuries to some key defenders, such as Acerbi from Inter Milan now. So unless the likes of Barella or Chiesa can drive the team forward, they're obviously going to have Scamacca up front, but the manager's called him lazy and left him out of squads previously, albeit he did go and score some goals for Atalanta, particularly against Liverpool towards the end of the season. I think they might actually struggle to finish in the top two in their group. I think Spain and Croatia will have a better group stage than them. And then if they do come third and qualify as one of the best of the remaining three, then they're going to face a massive team in the last 16. And I think if a reigning champion goes out in the group stages or last 16, kind of whimpers out finishing third in their group and loses to a big side, then that's a real disappointment for them. So yeah, Italy are going to be my flops for this year. So that is Italy, England, and Germany as flops. Move on to dark horses for the tournament. And Loro, who have you got for that?
They're starving for success, ravenous for rewards. It's hungry for the Euros. And I'll tell you why. They've only lost two in the last 18. Hungary, and I've been keeping a close eye on them since they battered England 4-0. I think they actually did the double over us, 1-0 and 4-0. They beat Germany as well, and they played one of the Irish teams the other night and lost, and it was the first loss in like 16. And I just think they've built up a little bit of momentum. There's normally one random team that does quite well within a tournament, Greece in 04 being an obvious one. I always remember South Korea getting to the semis in 02. I think Croatia did well to get to the final in 2018. But I just think Hungary might do okay. They've got a couple of good players in there. Szoboszlai, the obvious one. And they've got Kerkez, who is an underrated defender at Bournemouth. Bristol City fans know Adam Nagy, that's a nice ball player midfielder, sat in the middle there. So I just think they're the sort of team that might surprise a few. They're normally backed quite well. They've had some good results. They've shown they can beat the big teams twice against us. And if you can beat England, you can beat anyone. So I'm going to go for the Hungarians to have a good tournament.
Tomo?
Right. Well, I'm not really sure you can call these dark horses, but I'm going to go Spain. I just fancy them to have a good tournament. Usually with them, well, obviously, they did the 2008, 2010, 2012 treble, if you will. But since then, it's been their striker position that's really kind of let them down. And I feel like maybe Morata might just have a good tournament. And if he does, and then my prediction for the best young player, who we'll come on to soon, but will be Lamine Yamal, who I think he's still only 16, but he's already in Spain's squad, probably already going to be a starter. He played the other day, got two assists. I think he's quite clearly the real deal. 16 and played all season for Barcelona. He's going to be special. But quite often these teenagers who break through actually become like world renowned at international tournaments, a bit like Wayne Rooney did in Euro 2004, where he just played that tournament like he was the best player in the world. And I think that Lamine Yamal's got that kind of youthful exuberance where there's no care in the world because there's no fear factor for him because he hasn't experienced any sort of failure in his life yet. So yeah, my dark horses, just because they're not one of the favourites, is Spain.
And they got Rodri as well, which always helps, because I think apart from the FA Cup final, he's lost one game in about 50, hasn't he? So if City had won the FA Cup, it would have probably been inevitable that Rodri would win that tournament. But yeah, okay, Spain. Mine is Ukraine. So Ukraine had to qualify via playoffs against Bosnia and then Iceland, but they were in our group, England's group, with England and Italy. Premier League, you got Zinchenko. He's probably going to play in midfield. Mikalenko from Everton and Mudrik from Chelsea. They got a striker called Dovbyk who scored 25 goals for Girona last year. They were at the top of La Liga for quite a while, but they did finish in the Champions League places. And apparently they've got a young player called Sudakov who's at Shakhtar. So he's actually in the Ukrainian league, but he's being compared to Kevin De Bruyne, which is obviously some comparison. And he's probably looking to demonstrate what he can do and earn a big move. And then they've got Andre Lunin as well, who was a big part of Real Madrid's season in goal. He was, I think, rather harshly left out the Champions League final. They brought Courtois back in for that, but he's had a good season. And then also, Yarmolenko, who was at West Ham, he's going to become only the 22nd player to play across four Euro tournaments. And he's only three goals away from being Ukraine's top ever goal scorer. Can you tell me who their current top goal scorer is?
Shevchenko.
Yeah, well done, boys. Just sing it. Go on.
I'm sure you're probably going to come on to it, but I was just going to say, if you didn't mention it, they probably arguably got the easiest group. Belgium, Slovakia, Romania, and Ukraine. So
yeah.
I know most, like three nations mostly qualify out of the group stage, but you'd back Ukraine to at least come second there behind Belgium. But if they're as strong as you say they are, then you'd back them to top the group.
Who's Belgium's manager now? Anyone know that?
It's Tedesco, I think. Let me just Google it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. They're fucked then. I'd back Ukraine in that group. Bobby Martinez is Portugal now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Tomo, you're bang on. That their group is Belgium, Romania, Slovakia. And I think that the Belgiques are considered past their golden generation. They've still got Lukaku, De Bruyne, some players like that, don't get me wrong. But I don't think they are the team what they are. And importantly, even though three teams do go through from a group, if Ukraine can finish second or even top, then that obviously makes their last 16 tie a little bit easier. And if you then get a third place team in the last 16, you can suddenly see Ukraine into the quarterfinals, and then it's tournament football. There is also obviously a good distraction for Ukrainian people at the minute, and the team seem to be brought together with the war in the background, might galvanise them to do well. And yeah, I fancy them to have a sneaky good tournament, Ukraine. And I think they actually drew with both Italy and England in the group stages. I think we went and got a 1-1 draw out in Ukraine, and they drew with Italy at home as well. So they can make it difficult for big teams. They've got some big players, some prem-proven players in that Dovbyk, someone who's scoring goals, a really strong goalkeeper. So I think that they might have a good tournament, Ukraine.
Just a word of caution on dark horses. I think every man and their dog had Turkey as their World Cup dark horses 2 years ago. And I think they lost every single game and got booted out of tournament. So one of our teams are bound to do that.
Be surprised if it's Spain.
True.
So dark horses, Spain, Ukraine and Hungary. Boys, going to come on to the player of the tournament. And Tomo, you've got France winning it and Mbappe golden boot. So have you mixed it up, or is it your man Kylian again?
No, it's your man Kylian, for all the reasons you just outlined.
Cool, we'll leave it there. It's short and sweet. Laura?
I've gone for a young man that goes by the name of Jude Bellingham. He's going into the tournament playing for the best nation in the world on paper. He's playing the tournament in Germany. He, like Kane, will know all the grounds. He'd have played there for Dortmund. He's just won La Liga and he's just won the Champions League, and he's probably the best midfielder in the world. So if England are going to win it, like I think we are, I think Jude Bellingham will be or have a lot to do with that. So England to win it, Kane top goal scorer, Bellingham to be the player of the tournament, and I'll be a very happy man.
Well, mine's very similar in regards to it. It's for a team that I think is going to win the competition. So Portugal are going to win it, and I think player of the tournament is going to be Bruno Fernandes. We obviously know what he's all about. Man United's best player, one of our only shining lights this season. Creativity's a disgrace. His output numbers are consistently good. In qualifying for this tournament, he had 6 goals and 8 assists across the 10 qualifying games, and he's had 3 goals in 3 friendlies in 2024 so far for Portugal. Difficult season with United, but he won the FA Cup to finish off the year. He's going to be playing alongside the likes of the players we've spoken about already: Bernardo Silva, João Felix, Diego Jota, Goncalo Ramos, and if not, their striker that's known as Cristiano Ronaldo. And Bruno's likely to be on set pieces, and if Ronaldo's not on the pitch, probably on penalties too. As I say, fancy Portugal to win the tournament. I fancy him to star in it. And hopefully then signs a new contract with United and convinces João Neves to come sign and play CDM for us too. So I'm going to go for Bruno. So Kylian Mbappe, Jude Bellingham and Bruno for the player of the tournament. And then final prediction, boys, is a young player to watch out for. Tomo, I know you've already mentioned him, but just a little bit on your man from Spain.
Well, yeah. For every reason I've mentioned already, Lamine Yamal, 16 years old. I think it's an unbelievable achievement to be playing for your country at that age anyway. But he seems like the next sort of Messi-like figure coming off that Barcelona La Masia academy rank. And yeah, I think he's one to watch. Although, I mean, everyone knows about him already. He's done unbelievable things for Barcelona already at his age.
They've not been as like prevalent in European competitions, have they? Like going deep in Europe, and they've been in sort of Europa League in previous years, not getting too far in Champions League. So actually on a European stage, it's probably, with him being so young, the first chance that people see him on that sort of European slash global stage. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles that and the fact that he's going to be one of his main sort of players for his nation at 16. So yeah, interesting to see how he goes.
Yeah, and just a sort of an example of how young he is. He's obviously taken everything in his stride for Barcelona so far this season, and he seems to be taking it all in his stride for Spain as well. I think this morning or yesterday he mentioned that he's having to take his homework to the tournament because he's still in school, which is insane.
I don't think he's going to need too much of an education. I think his career is fairly well defined now. So he'd have been born then, what, 16 years ago, 2008? So there'd have been a Euros on that year. So who won Euro 2008?
Spain.
Spain? Yeah. So he's born the year.
2007 he was born.
Right, okay. So just before, so he must be coming up to his 17th birthday then at some point this year. So he'd have just been born when they lifted the trophy. Mad that that's 16 years ago and he was so young. Lauren, your young player to watch?
Well, firstly, I've never heard of Lamine Yamal. And it might be something to do with the fact he's only got 5 in 38 for Barcelona. So not setting the world alight yet. He might not need an education in the normal sense of the word, but he might in terms of end product. But we'll see. He's only young, 17 in July. But I've actually gone for another Spaniard in Pedri, who I know everyone knows about already because he played at the last Euros. But I think he's still only 21. And I just think that, I mean, I'm not huge on foreign football, but sat there in the middle next to Rodri, sometimes he can make other players look good. And I fancy actually Spain, I wouldn't have called them a dark horse, but I do fancy them to do well in this tournament. And actually a team that I'd absolutely hate England to come up against. I watched them live in the last Euros and the way that they keep the ball is unbelievable. And that's obviously sort of embedded in the way the Spanish have played over the last couple of decades. So I think someone in that Spain setup could come out with, you know, an improved and enhanced reputation after this tournament. And maybe it's the one where Pedri goes from a really good young prospect into a world-level player. I'm sure Barcelona fans think he is already, but I haven't seen too much of him since the last Euros, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he's improved. So I've gone for Pedri, albeit I've not even heard of the guy that Tiago has put forward.
Lamine Yamal, 16 years old, he has scored or assisted 5 times in his last 7 games for Spain.
How many caps he got for Spain already at 16?
7.
I mean, bloody hell, still at 16 to have played 7 times for your country and probably going to start right wing at a major tournament. That is mad numbers at that age. So 2 Spaniards there. My young player to watch is going to be Florian Wirtz of Germany. So he's 21 years old, was player of the season in Bundesliga for Bayer Leverkusen, who we obviously all know won the league at a canter this year. He had an ACL injury in 2022, but had an unbelievable season. This season just gone, 18 goals, 19 assists across all comps. He's likely to play alongside Musiala either side of Kai Havertz, who's obviously had a good season in the Prem and brings players into play. So they're going to probably use him to link up in that false nine position with Musiala, who is another young star for Bayern Munich. But Florian Wirtz, he's being touted to move for over 100 million. Maybe the season after next, he might stay at Leverkusen for one more year. But if he's not already, he's definitely going to be a superstar. Home tournament, home fans, I think him and Musiala are going to be the two players that Germany sort of hang their hat on to do well. They're going to have like Gundogan in behind them, people like that in midfield as well. And yeah, I'm really excited to see him play. I think he's going to have a great tournament, and that's all starting on Friday night against Scotland when the competition gets underway.
Did you say he's a false nine?
No, Kai Havertz will play there, He will play either side of Musiala. But obviously, they have got the centre forward in that fulcrum who we watched in the Champions League final for Dortmund, who is someone who can come on to mix it up. But Havertz, him and Musiala are going to be the three up front, I would imagine, or the most forward-thinking players, with Gundogan in the 10.
Yeah, you can't win a tournament with Kai Havertz up front. They're anti-Niemi there. Yeah. Finished.
So, young players to watch then. Florian Wirtz, Pedri and Yamil. So, two Spaniards and a German. So, boys, that is our predictions. Much like our Premier League ones, we will come back to them in a few weeks' time and see where they are. Hopefully, none are as bad as my claim that United will win the Premier League. But to be honest, I hope, Lauro, I hope you're right. I hope England win. I hope Harry Kane's golden boot. And I hope Jude Bellingham's player of the tournament. But we'll come back and see success on our predictions. Let's move on to England then, boys. And some good news coming out today is that all 26 players, including Bakayo Saka, but probably more significantly, Luke Shaw, have trained today in full team training. Don't know if he'll necessarily be risked against Serbia, and we'll come on to our team selection for that in a bit. But Tomo, if he's back out on the grass and in full team training, that is massive news for England.
Yeah, that's so important. And hopefully that means he can maybe even get 20 minutes on Sunday. I just think that left back position, I don't question Kieran Trippier's defensive prowess. I think he's really reliable. I just think when you play a right footer in that left back position, it stifles your attacking verve. Like when it goes to him, he basically just cuts back on his right foot, plays it back to the centre mid or back to the centre half. Whereas obviously if Luke Shaw plays there, you can open it out, whipping balls to the striker's feet, whip balls around the defence or over the top. And I just think a left footer in that team gives so much more balance. So, yeah, he'd be the most important player to get fit, I think. So, yeah, hopefully he gets some minutes on Sunday as well.
Laura, I guess with us taking no other recognised left backs, it was a gamble, but there must have been some inclination that he was nearing closer to fitness to not call up any other left back, so maybe a nod that the medical team knew what they were doing. And as we just touched on there, important to get him back in the side.
Yeah, and let's be honest, we're going to get through the group. I know I've said that quite complacently already, but the group in terms of Luke Shaw is about getting him up to fitness for the last stages, isn't it? So we can play a left back. So the last group game, which maybe he might be able to get 75-90 in, is still 2 weeks ago, two weeks away. So if he's in full training now, like you say, you can dip him in and out of the first two, build him up to the third game where hopefully there ain't a lot on it, let him get his fitness up, and then by the time we're in that last 16 game, hopefully we've got somewhere near a fully fit Luke Shaw. So, and it is going to be important because, like you say, attacking-wise, particularly if Phil Foden's going to start on that, on paper, on that left-side position, we are going to need someone with a left foot both defensively and offensively to help us in both boxes. So, yeah, very important. And the signs are good, aren't they?
I think no coincidence either that United play better when he's playing as well. Like Rashford had his best season when Shaw was fit last year, overlapping, creating space, gave to the fullback someone else to think about with those runs. And also the left side of defence centrally looked good as well. So suddenly if Guy's got a recognised left back to the side of him alongside John Stones, then maybe it looks a lot stronger that England defence. So I wouldn't rush him back, as you say. I think we got enough to get through the group stages. He is someone who's prone to injury, but if we can get him back in, particularly towards those later stages, then I think our claims for success rise exponentially with him in the side. So great news to have that back, him back in. So we've obviously flown out to Germany now, but last weekend we had a final warm-up game against Iceland. Cause for concern because we played close to our starting 11 and lost 1-0. But Lauro, sometimes those friendlies can be seen as a bit of a glorified training session. And from a player's point of view, the final game where you're thinking, please don't get injured before a major tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only going to say what most people with half a brain cell will be thinking, and that is that I think that 1-0 defeat to Iceland probably cements England as the tournament favourites, because I'm glad that the lads went out there and only emptied sort of 50-60% of the tank. If you think about pre-season games for your club, sometimes I remember Leeds getting done like 4-2 by Oxford the year that we went up in the Championship playing our full side. It's not about the result. If you want to cheer on the result, we beat Bosnia 4 days before, go and celebrate that meaningless victory as well. It's about those players getting out there, getting up to some kind of fitness together, ready for the Euros, where we can step up the intensity and actually go for broke. And one thing that's always important in tournaments is that you build up and you peak at the right time and you don't waste it all there. So we could have gone and beat Iceland 7-0 on Friday and then drawn to Serbia. We want to go into that Euros with everyone, where possible, fit and at full fettle. So, a nice 1-0 defeat, if there ever is one. Meaningless result. Would have been nice for the people at Wembley, sold at Wembley, to see a win, I suppose. But at the end of the day, if we go and win the Euros, as I expect we will, no one's going to be bothered about that result. And just for anyone that is erring on the side of pessimism there, Argentina, who won the World Cup, lost their first group game in the tournament to Saudi Arabia, I think. So don't worry, we're fine.
I actually think that's the best result for England, stinking the place out, losing 1-0 to Iceland, because I just think it not only does it, in general terms, lower the expectations slightly among the media, etc., and fans, but also it focuses the minds of the players and of the staff that we're not quite there yet, or we're not the finished article. Completely agree with Lauro. Absolutely meaningless game. Danny Murphy, I think, said on TalkSport either today or yesterday, can't remember which, it's basically a glorified training session. Most of the players who know they're going to be in the starting 11 anyway, they take their foot off the gas. They don't want to get injured. They're just basically playing through the motions, essentially. And the intensity is just not there. So, not really a surprise, but I think it's the best thing that could have happened for England and for Gareth Southgate.
Well, having said all that then, boys, there was obviously a lot of the potential first-teamers 11 out there. So, it's time to put together our starting 11 for 8 p.m. Sunday against Serbia. So I think we're going to take for granted that we've got Pickford in goal, John Stones at centre-half, Kyle Walker at right-back. Who we think in partner Stones at centre-half? Do we think it's going to be Mark Gaye? Do you think any of the other centre-backs have got a chance of starting?
No.
No, it would be Mark Gaye.
Left-back, Trippier?
Yeah.
Until Shaw's back in.
What are we doing here? What we think is going to happen, or what we?
Yeah. Well, you can do either if you want. Just what your starting 11 is going to be for Serbia on Sunday.
Because the thing is, I think, and for me, he's got the front four as well, and he's got Rice in the middle. It's just, I think that, and looking at squad numbers and the way it's set out, Gueye's going to play at the back, and it'll be Trippier until Shaw's fit. It's that middle of the park is the big position, isn't it? Are we not all Foden, Bellingham, Saka and Kane after Rice?
Yeah.
So it's who's going to play in the middle with Rice. And it sounds like it's going to be Trent. Now, for the group stages, I don't mind, because I think we could play me in there and I'd do bits. But it's when we're going to get into the France and the Spains later on in the tournament where Trent Alexander-Arnold may become a problem being a midfielder. So maybe he's thinking, right, let's do Serbia and Denmark and see how Trent gets on in there with Rice. Is his kind of attacking prowess and what he delivers in his passing range and assists and goal threat almost going to outweigh what we might lose in midfield nous? That would be what I think Gareth Southgate is thinking, if Trent Alexander-Arnold is in line to start, which it sounds like he is. What do you boys think?
Yeah, I think it sounds like Trent's going to be the man. My prediction is that Conor Gallagher is going to have a massive say in this tournament. When it goes to those latter stages, I agree with you, Laura. I don't think he'll trust Trent to do the defensive stuff. And I think Conor Gallagher will come in. I don't think he's got that trust in Kobbie Mainoo right now to do that defensive stuff and to protect England's back four, just like a Conor Gallagher would. So I think Conor Gallagher going ahead and moving into the last 16 quarterfinals, I think he'll have a big part to play.
Or is he thinking, along the same lines as you, Tomo, that our defence is more fragile than usual, and the best way to get through this tournament is through firepower and outscoring the opponents, and therefore having Trent in the midfield to help assist, create, start moves? I know it's very un-Southgate, but so is a couple of the selections he's made in the squad. Is he thinking Trent in there might help us go and win a game 4-2 instead of maybe 1-0?
Well, I think his post-match press conference or one of his post-match interviews, you can see a clue in there. And he said that basically not having that stability and the work rate off the ball basically affects everything you do. And I think essentially kind of what he's getting at is, look, balance is absolutely everything in that midfield area. It's not a case of just going gung-ho and hoping that we score more than the opposition. So I think he'll lean to more towards pragmatic Gareth Southgate, the way he's always been, and play a Calvin Phillips type alongside Declan Rice, and it'll probably be Conor Gallagher.
Can I just say, by the way, that I'm absolutely stunned how one seemingly bad performance against Iceland now means that Kobbie Mainoo's just widely thought of as like completely unstartable for England. Like, he was brilliant against Belgium in a friendly for England. He's done well for England in other scenarios. He's been unbelievable for Man United, including scoring the winning goal in the FA Cup final. I know that Trent's got the number 8 shirt. I know that Conor Gallagher's been spoke about his work rate. But, I mean, Kobbie Mainoo's work rate and adding stability to Man United's midfield and his kind of physicality as age, and generally speaking, it's really difficult for all fan bases to like actually like a player. But I think there's, you know, there's some people are saying that Adam Wharton's clear of him, but that's kind of social media for you. I think it's widely recognised that Kobbie Mainoo's a really, really good player for his age and is going to be a superstar. There's been one Guardian journalist who's given him a 4 out of 10 and blamed him for the Iceland goal, which I didn't think he was at fault for anyway. I think there's way more players in that side who could have been blamed for that. Aaron Ramsdale, Declan Rice, John Stones, Phil Foden. I can't believe that he could seem to be completely out of the conversation to start that.
No, but it's not a case of he's out of the conversation. It's just, what do I think Gareth Southgate will do?
And I was just going to say
Southgate's shown time and time again that he's not really a big risk taker. And I think Kobbie Mainoo is more of a risk than a Conor Gallagher. And obviously he's more of a risk than Trent, because Trent's sort of more experienced. Was he 25 now? He's won all the titles he has with Liverpool. And I know he's playing...
He's right back.
I know he's playing centre mid, but he offers a bit more control and he's obviously a baller as well. I just think Southgate's not that much of a risk taker. So I'd probably start Kobbie if it was me as the England manager. But let's be honest, the country's happy that I'm not the England manager.
Very much so. And for me, if you look at the Jarrod Branthwaite one, it's quite similar. For the same reasons you said just then, Murph, he's had an amazing season. He looks like he's going to be a well-beaten defender as well.
Yeah.
Gareth Southgate's reasoning for not taking him was, I don't think he was quite ready. He's not quite right. And again, it goes back to his risk-taking on players. He likes players that he can trust. I think Kobbie Mainoo's actually quite lucky to be in the squad because of that mindset. And I think he's there because there aren't many standout central midfielders. Do you know what I mean? Let's be honest. We've got Kobbie Mainoo and Adam Wharton as two of our 5 midfielders who are very inexperienced. So I really, really don't see a world where Mainoo plays, even regardless if he had a worldie against Iceland or not.
So I know we're having kind of 2 separate conversations within one here of what will Gareth do, but what would we do? Laurie, you spoke about potentially there being a mindset of let's just kill these teams and go at them with an unbelievable front 6, which is why Trent would be in there. Is there an argument to play Jude Bellingham, who is a centre mid, albeit played further forward for Real Madrid in false 9? Could you not just say to Declan Rice, look, you're one of the best central defensive midfielders in the world. We know you've added loads to your game for Arsenal going forward, but for England, we need you to be a disciplined holding midfielder. Jude Bellingham is your other centre mid, and then Foden in the 10, and then you can bring another world-class winger, be it Cole Palmer, I mean, world-class is a bit strong, but Cole Palmer or Anthony Gordon onto that starting 11? Is there not an argument to do that rather than playing Trent in there?
There would have been if Bellingham played centre middle year, I think, this year. But as he's played basically as a striker, I don't think Gareth Southgate's going to stick him in midfield with Rice in a two. What I think he might do, if Trent is playing, in my head, the England side is a 4-2-3-1 with two centre mids, Bellingham in the 10 and then two wingers. What I think he might do is play it as more of a 4-3-3 with Bellingham, Rice and Trent. Give Bellingham a little bit more of a hybrid midfield role, like an 8.5, where basically he can help stiffen up that midfield with Rice and Trent. If Trent goes wandering, Bellingham can drop in, but still implement his power and ability going forward as well. And it will be set up more of a Trent and Bellingham either side of a Declan Rice. That's what I think he might do, because I just don't see Rice and Trent in a two being Gareth Southgate at all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm so surprised at Trent being the number eight. I don't know how much you can read into squad numbers in tournaments, but to me, club football, you pick your number based on what number you want to be. In international football, your 1 to 11 tends to be your players out on the pitch. And so that does make me think that you're right, that he's going to start in centre mid. But that just stuns me that that's the first choice option there. I know you've got inexperienced centre mids, but they are at least centre mids. And this Trent's done well for England. You know, I go back to the point that he was better in that second half against Bosnia when he went to right back. He scored a great goal, but he was at right back then. He sprayed a really good ball out to Grealish. He was at right back then. I know we say he's got defensive frailties, but he's still got to do defending in midfield. It doesn't just mean that you've got a back four who take all of that burden off of you. If we've got a front four of Bellingham, your two wingers, and Kane, the two centre mids then need to be midfielders. So I'm just not completely sold as Trent as a midfield starter for England in a major tournament that we're bookies' favourites for. But, you know, we'll see what Gareth's got up his sleeve. We just spoke there, boys, about the forward positions. We're in a couple of group chats and there's been some question marks on the wingers as well, on who starts there. Obviously, it looks like it's going to be Foden and Saka, but you have got Cole Palmer, who's had an unbelievable season. You have got some people who've said that Foden's not playing well for England and doesn't play well for England, so Anthony Gordon could start at left wing. Do you think there's any sort of chance that either of those boys come in for Saka and Foden?
No.
No. Friend of the show, though, Dan Snell, at D_Snell91, has sworn blind that Gordon will start on the left. And that's something I've put in the bag ready for Sunday. So I'm trying to get into a mindset of where I'm dropping Foden or Saka for Anthony Gordon in the Euros. I don't know if either of you boys can humour me for a couple of moments on that one. I think Gordon is come in as the Rashford replacement, the sort of speedy in behind winger that can also play through the middle if needed. But really and truly, we're hoping not to really need someone like Anthony Gordon, albeit maybe off the bench if we're home and dry in a game and we can give him some minutes to rest someone else. But as a starter, there's no way we're going to field a team with everyone fit without Foden, Bellingham, Kane and Saka.
I actually think Anthony Gordon will be that player. If you're winning 1-0, 2-0, 3-1, whatever it might be, and we almost sat off a little bit and invited the other team on, Anthony Gordon will come on for the likes of Foden, and his intensity off the ball and his work rate will be beneficial in the defensive side of the game, but also his pace will be unbelievably beneficial on the counter-attack. I can't see him starting.
No, I think you're right with both winger choices there, boys. I do think that's going to be our settled front four. And there's a really interesting point that's been made recently around, people always talk about sort of squads for major tournaments, but ultimately it's your starting 11, keeping them fit, keeping them playing in tournaments and adding the right balance of people to keep the culture and sort of morale good in the squad, but also come in for those sort of 15-minute intervals. And people get caught up a lot in the sort of 26s and the, you know, the third striker and those sort of bits, when really you're unlikely and really as a national team don't want to be seeing them at any point in the tournament. So go on, Laurie, before we move on to Serbia.
was just going to advise everyone that Stuart Pearce actually is starting Eberechi Eze on the left of a front four behind Harry Kane. And he said it doesn't really matter who your starting 11 is because you can change it. So maybe no wonder that David Moyes withdrew him from the West Ham backroom staff a year before. And now he's on TalkSport.
I've been really scratching my head as well as to why Jeff Stelling was removed from Gillette Soccer Saturday, but he's completely let him and his family down by putting his England 11 to take on Serbia and playing Cole Palmer and Anthony Gordon in the team and dropping John Stones out for Lewis Dunk as well. So he's got Pickford, Walker, Dunk, Guy, Trippier, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Rice, Palmer, Bellingham, Gordon, Kane. So maybe a bit of reason why Sky Sports gave Jeff the boot there. Anyway, moving on to Serbia. So obviously England's first game against Serbia, they tend to play a back five with two defensive midfielders. They have a 10 and two strikers. So you're going to have that back five that we need to break down with two DMs then sat kind of condensing it even more. Their strikers that they play tend to be Mitrovic, Valovic and Jovic. So Mitro is out in Saudi, but we've obviously seen what he can do in the Prem. Vlahovic at Juventus, and then Luka Jovic, who was at one time at Real Madrid. I'm not sure where he plays his trade now. With them having back five and two sort of CDMs, they use set pieces. They have a lot of headed shots on goals. They scored five in qualifying, which might be a slight worry with no slab-head Harry Maguire for us. And they did also win their 2022 Nations League group with Slovenia, who are also in our group, Norway and Sweden. Their manager's calling it their golden generation. However, they do concede goals. So only four clean sheets in 15 since the World Cup. And they've only played two teams in the world top 20 in those 15 games, which is USA and Belgium. And at the last World Cup, they conceded 50 shots across three group games and conceded eight goals. So looks like they're going to try and get set pieces and score some headers, try and play that back five or two DMs to stink the game out. But looks like they concede chances and concede goals. And with England's front line, they should have way too much for them.
You've made them sound unplayable there. They've got a bank of seven and then two world-class strikers and they're good from set pieces and it's the golden generation. So all of a sudden, I'm a bit worried. But maybe that comes into the thinking of Trent as well. If you're playing in front of a back five with two sitters, you need as many players on the pitch that can unlock a defence as possible. And maybe that's come into the thinking of Trent. And then by the time we get to Denmark, we'll see Conor Gallagher drift back in. But thanks for that, because that was very informative. I didn't know that about Serbia. Whenever I think of them, I think of Mitrovic and Milinkovic-Savic, who have carried the flag for them for the last few years. And that's about it. So, to be fair, we said this before, the group is harder than we've had in the last few tournaments, isn't it? Like, they've all got a bit about them, these teams. On their day, they can do an Iceland on us or something like that. So we are going to have our wits about us. And you just never know. Like, sometimes, even in the tournaments we've done well in, I mean, we drew 0-0 to Scotland in the one that we got to the final in. Sometimes if the game gets away from you a little bit, it can drift and then anything can happen. So hopefully, like Tigal said, it'll be a blessing in disguise, the Iceland one. Everyone will be clicked into gear and we'll be ready to put on a show against what sound like a very stifling Serbia.
Yeah, and then Denmark as well. Obviously, we played them in, what was it, semi-final of the last Euros and needed a Harry Kane rebounded penalty in added time. They got some Prem players, obviously Christian Eriksen and Rasmus Højlund from United, but Brentford have got a few Danes as well in there. So they are obviously a decent side who could potentially cause some issues. And then, look, Slovenia is the last group game. I'm hoping we're on 6 points by then. I'm really hoping we don't need anything out of that game to qualify, albeit we should do the business. But if we're going to go on and win the tournament, then you've got to get out of a group and be beating Serbia, Denmark and Slovenia. Boys, that's all we've got time for, but we will be back next week where we will know how England have got on in their first group game. We'll obviously look at all the other main teams and predictions that we've made so far and how they've started, and we will continue these podcasts throughout the Euros. But boys, pleasure as always. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
One, two, three.